VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, Sally's doing fine. She's up in Mississippi tonight.
So,
that's a gem.
It's great.
Oh my God.
Little song. And what's great is a lot of the stuff Ben talked about, it's funny. It was love at just one look when she saw the size of his pocketbook. It's a hilarious song.
Oh, dude, I also love, Jeff turned me onto the song and I've always loved it. It cracks me up that he's like, you know, they're in a fancy place. That's where they're up in Mississippi. So yokely. That's how shitty the panhandle of Florida is. They're like, she's off someplace really cool. Mississippi.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, welcome to the 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys podcast on the Electricast Podcast Network. Gentlemen, how are you tonight?
Doing well, Timmy. Glad to be here.
Good, Ben. Good. Jeff, are you well?
I'm fine. I was just trying to be polite.
Yeah, so I'm the only cranky one here. And you know why I'm a little cranky? Because we've run out of gas. What town are we in?
It looks a little swampy and looks like a college town.
Wait a minute. Is that Gainesville, Florida?
Gainesville, Florida, it is.
We are gassing up in Gainesville, Florida here on our musical road trip. Took a wrong turn coming out of Texas there. So as long as we're here gassing up at the gas pump, we should talk a little Tom Petty, should we not?
Sounds like a plan.
And here in Gainesville, Jeff Simons, do you know anyone from Gainesville?
I do, in fact, know somebody from Gainesville. Me! I'm from Gainesville, Florida, believe it or not. Yeah, my folks met at the University of Florida. So I spent a couple of years of my early youth in Gainesville before Dad was drafted and sent to... Newport. Rhode Island for basic training. Yeah, because that's where the action was.
So we've got two American rock icons coming from Gainesville, Florida. This is terrific. Yes. This is terrific.
One doing slightly more heavy lifting than the other, but thank you.
And for those of us who've never been here before, Jeff, what's it like? You said swampy?
Well, when I was there in 150 years ago, it was a really small town. Like, it was the University of Florida and nothing else.
Okay.
And both my parents were graduate students, so we lived in a really pretty rundown apartment complex at the edge of town. My most vivid memory is when gas went over 29 cents a gallon.
Right.
And I remember seeing the sign changed to 30 cents a gallon. And my parents were like, 30 cents a gallon? Who's ever going to pay that? I still remember them having that conversation about how crazy that was.
poor graduate students.
I remember the university it seemed enormous to a 6-7-year-old kid.
Right.
But it was super Southern. It was hot as hell. It would rain like the end of the world, and then it would be all evaporated 4 minutes later. I just remember a lot of heat, a lot of palm trees, and it felt really isolated. I felt really like there was no, I remember you the nearest, besides the university,
uh-huh.
like there was no culture, you know,
right.
There weren't movie theaters and
great place to learn how to play guitar.
Yeah, I was way before before me, but somebody else.
Thank you.
Good out of there, yeah.
Ben Barton, do you have any Gainesville, Florida experiences?
I do. First, I will second what Jeff noted already, which is that it's not on the beach. No. And they put Tallahassee and the University of Florida. They parked things that had to be there, like capitals and universities, in the worst, shittiest parts of the state. It's a shit burg for sure. I have been there two different times, and I have three different brief stories from this.
Oh, wow. First, let's go.
Went down there. I haven't completed this tour, but I've been trying to hit all of the SEC football stadiums. This was one of the very first ones I did. And I actually went down with a group of wealthy alumni. So picture it. I'm the youngest person there. We're all dressed in orange. And it's like plutocrats and the dean of the law school. And I'm walking along with them. And a drunken frat boy comes and just wails into me. Like just lowers his shoulder into me. And it's like, you got a problem.
Oh my God.
And I was like, are you aware that I'm the type of person that the police protect? So there are other younger orange clad people that you could start with and have a good old throwdown. You want to attack me in front of my wealthy alumni friends? And he's like, ooh, and then wandered off. Fantastic. And the second thing I note from that game is, so I love SEC football and I'm a huge fan of the Vols, but you go to Florida and they do the Gator Chomp and there's all this singing and chanting and stuff. And I'm looking around and I'm like, look at these sheep. Look at these morons all acting together. Like, I just can't believe how unbelievably stupid they are. And then I'm like, wait a second, except that I do all the same things with slightly different words in Tennessee, and it's awesome.
Good realization.
The third one is I went down there to speak, and I've got a pretty good friend who's on the faculty there, and so he's giving me the tour, and he's driving me around, and we get around to the football stadium, and this is when Urban Meyer was the coach and they'd won several national championships. And I was like, oh man, you must just be over the moon about the football program. And he was like, oh no, I haven't gone to a football game in 10 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, really? And he was like, oh yeah, it's so, so immoral. I can barely support the basketball team, but I can't go to a football game. I mean, it's just like those kids are just completely eaten up and used, and like hardly any of them make it onto the pros, and it's just chew them out. They don't even go to class. It's a disaster. The moral calculus of going to a football game is completely unacceptable. And I was like, oh, all right, well, thanks for pointing that out. I'm a longtime season ticket holder to the University of Tennessee, which surely is a different moral calculus.
That's correct. That is correct. You're getting a full education there.
I remember I went to a Florida basketball game, and we took my neighbor, whose name I think was Calvin. Calvin was not a bright kid. And my dad, I remember when the game was over, my dad's like gathering up stuff, and Calvin says, so who won?
Oh,
he's like, well, you see what they had. I think it was Arkansas. You see what Arkansas had? You see what Florida had? He's like, yeah. He's like, well, which number's bigger? He's like, well, I don't know. And then one number is 76 and one number is 58. It's like, so who won? He's like, I don't know. Who won? I remember my dad, like, I was watching him try to blink his way through the 7-year-old who didn't know numbers yet.
Oof.
That had quite an effect on me. I'm like, oh, not everybody pays attention in class.
Right. or goes to class at all. Well, let's get a little Tom Petty in the air here. Get some music going. I haven't given you any clues what we're playing. Oh, actually, I did. But anyways, can you guys tell me the first Grammy? No. Tell me the year Tom Petty wins his first Grammy. What year is it?
1989, I think.
89. Ben, you go higher or lower?
Lower.
You're going to go lower? 1990, it takes Tom Petty to win a Grammy, and it's
which
album
is
of the Old
Moon Fever. Yeah,
no, it's with the Traveling Wilburys.
Oh, for God's sake,
yes,
oh, that's so perfect.
And so, I've decided I don't want to hear a Traveling Wilburys song, instead, we're going to go with his first Grammy nomination. It didn't win, But he was nominated in 1982 for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Stevie Nicks. Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Seriously? Okay.
I love that song. You don't like that song? He wrote that song, Jeff Simons?
He did.
I love that song.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
I know that Jeff can name this. So, Tim.
Yeah.
Can you name the other song that's a duet between those two artists?
Yes.
Is it Leather and Lace? No, that's stupid Don Henley. wait, there's another Tom Nicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's The Insider, right?
Yeah. Insider.
Yeah,
promises.
Insider. It's a pretty one.
Give to me your leather, take from me my lace. No,
so the connection here is Jimmy Iovine, who has produced Damn the Torpedoes and was producing the Stevie Nicks first solo record. And she didn't have what he thought was a hit single because she didn't have Edge of 17 yet. So he knew that the band had passed on this one. So he borrowed it. And then this song knocked the Tom Petty single out of the top 40.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
By the way, did you hear the story of, I found this on Wikipedia, why it's called Edge of 17?
Mm-mm.
Tom Petty's first wife had such a thick Gainesville accent when Stevie asked, like, when did you guys meet? She said, at the age of 17. But it sounded to Stevie Nicks like at the edge of 17.
No
that's
way.
That becomes the song. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it really is.
Age of 17. All right. Well, let's put Tom Petty on pause for one quick moment. We got to, Jeff Simons, tell you about Wilco, because Ben and I went to Wilco, not together, as luck would have it. You went in Knoxville, Ben. Did you enjoy the show?
Fantastic. Yeah.
So great. A friend of the podcast, Michael Jorgensen, said he loved Knoxville. Great town. Loved Asheville. So he reached out and said hello through email. I had offered him a home cooked meal. He turned me down. Nice. I don't know why.
Did you get to hang out with him after the show? Or
we did not, but the whole family went to Wilco here in Asheville. So I dragged all my kids along, and Martha has come around. She's now a huge fan. She says it's not just depressed old man music, which I thought was a win.
Or she's becoming older and more depressed.
So I wanted to tell you about Flannery, though. Flannery and I are sitting next to each other. We're at the very edge of the balcony, kind of looking down on the stage. And we're on the side of Nels Klein. And they open up with Handshake Drugs. And as soon as the guitar solo starts, Nels Klein starts doing Nels Klein stuff. Flannery grabs my elbow. And I turn to her. And she looks at me, she's like, what the hell was that? Like, what is happening right now? What is he doing right now? Because I've never seen anything like that. Like, she's like, did you see what he just did? I'm like, yeah. Watch him the whole show. So it was a big success. Kids loved it. Martha and Patrick were down in the front row. Yeah, great time. And they're now Nels Klein fans, too.
Awesome.
Yeah, longtime listeners will recall when we discussed the last Wilco record, I complained bitterly about the slow country numbers.
Uh-huh.
And I predicted, though, that I would see them live and they would be much better live and I would come around on it. I'm not all the way around that, but they were so much better live.
Yeah.
much better live. And the show was great. They did five songs in that ilk, all of them much, much faster. One thing that really helps is like the drummer in Wilco is just
he
was just like bang, 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 just fucking snapping those songs. It's just the tempo was so much better. And so and the rest of the set was great. Jeff, you would have loved it. They did, like, we closed out with like four songs from being there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Just tearing through.
Big up being there. And their road manager retired, and so they played her her favorite song. Once in Germany, someone said nine. No. What's the name of that song?
I'm a Wheel. I love that song. Yeah. I'm seeing them. Susan and I have tickets to see them at the Greek in Berkeley in October.
Excellent.
And I got dead center, 10 rows up in the bowl. They're the best seats in the house.
Great.
We're thrilled for that.
You're going to love it. Love it. And Jeff, you had a show recently.
I did. I played last Friday night at the Back Room in Berkeley. And I played exactly during game 6 of the Warriors-Lakers series. So attendance was impacted, shall we say. I actually have so many hilarious texts from friends like, see, what happened is that you were against the Warriors game and we didn't.
Oh,
it actually turns out I would have had a pretty good crowd, but it's fine. I'm getting reps. I'm getting up there. I'm trying stuff out. I played solo for the first 20 minutes, and then the band and I played full acoustic for the because it was such a small place. So.
Awesome. What'd you close with?
Close with Emily.
Awesome.
It's turning out to be quite a good set ender.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the word on the Bob Dylan record?
Yeah. So the first in a series of 50 years of music inspired EPs is going to come out this summer. Just had a meeting with the Politburo. So
the label,
three Dylan covers from 1966 coming out in about a month, I think, but I'll have more information, next podcast.
Cool.
Well, exciting. And we're trying to put a little 3-night sprint through Southern California together, like a little San Diego, LA.
Oh, really?
Santa Cruz, maybe back up to San Francisco, little thing in July. So we'll see if we can make it happen.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be
great. Yeah.
Sorry about your Warriors.
Oh, I remember Ben squeaking out some tears in 94 when the Knicks lost to the Bulls. Thinking, wow, I'll just never love a sports team that much. And then I was watching Curry cry on the bench. I was just weeping. But I came home and saw the highlights. So, yeah, it was just a brutal way to go out with Wiggins hurt and Jordan Poole completely falling apart. And, we'll see.
Maybe they got
another reboot in them and maybe they don't. Yeah, Clay can't shoot.
That's a bummer.
We deserve – I mean, here's the thing. Boy, did we deserve to lose. If that's better, like losing by 2 points in a game where you could complain about a call or this or that, like
right,
no shadow of any doubt on this one. So
one empire is descending while another is ascending. Ben Barton,
that's the too Knicks? Strong to me.
Empire,
that's a little too strong. what I will say, I think Jeff and I both share the weird frustration, which is that we're pretty big NBA fans, and the Lakers and the Heat sucked all year.
Yeah.
All year, these teams sucked. Yeah. The Heat were unwatchable. Like, they trotted out this, like, roster of these, like, complete, you know, like, sub-NBA player guys. Slow, fat, white guys all over that team. And then they suddenly managed to turn themselves into Eastern Conference finalists just on the backs of the Knicks. And they were so much better than us. They just were just so much better than us.
They're locked in.
Thrilled with my guy, Jalen Brunson.
Yes.
Their favorite Knicks since Latrell Sprewell. And generally, I think you're right, Timmy. I mean, basically, you get some of the cranky fans who are mad. I'm not mad at all. That's just all gravy. What a fantastic year. So much better than I thought. I mean, dude, a month into this season, I was like, it's time to tank. Pull the plug. So,
you know what I'm saying?
Very pleased.
Brunson already is more lovable than Carmelo ever was.
Oh, like, I never. My favorite player.
So much harder.
from that era was Pablo Prigioni.
Yeah.
48-year-old Italian guy who they brought over, who I loved. I loved that guy. So no, I never cottoned to DeMello. He just wasn't my taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, imagine being able to pull for Jason Tatum. I mean, what a joyful to have him go like 1 for 15 and then hit
1 for 25 in three combined first quarters.
Oh, I know. I was watching. And then to hit 3 3-pointers in a row to win game 6 and then game 7 was just an all-timer. All-timer.
You're like, I mean, if he misses any of those 3-pointers, the season ends there and you guys are like breaking it up and Jaylen Brown's not worth the money. I mean, it is amazing how whole dynasties can turn on 3 minutes of basketball.
Isn't it crazy? It really
is. Yeah, it really is. If you guys don't pound the Heat, though, like right out of the gate, I mean, that yourself, you do not look like a team that's like, okay, now we've got it figured out. Like that Sixers team, like, I mean, James Harden is just a mess.
Well, it took him to game 6 to go with the right lineup. All right. Well, let's get to Tom Petty streaming.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is great. What do you think is Tom Petty's most streamed song? And I'm going to give you four choices.
I know it. I actually know it.
All right, Jeff, you're in. Ben's out. Here are your choices.
Okay.
American Girl.
Yeah.
End of the Line.
Oh, God.
Mary Jane's Last Dance or Free Falling?
Oh, it's Free Falling.
It is indeed. No hesitation.
It's not even close, right? I bet Free Falling's like it at like 800 million or something like that.
565 million for Free Falling. American Girl's at 296. I put End of the Line there just to scare you, but
it's just no way in hell.
But 155 million is still pretty scary that song has 155 million.
That song
listens.
Comes on the stupid radio all Sirius XM all the time. It drives me crazy.
So what do you want to play out of those four?
Oh, this one.
She's a good girl, loves her mom, loves Jesus in America too. She's a good girl, crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too. And it's a long day, living in Reseda, there's a freeway, running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy, cause I don't even I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart. I'm free.
Woo! I should love that song, but when the Patriots were on their undefeated season, that song I associate with the New York Giants and the helmet catch. And I can't untangle them.
Why?
It was like, I felt that the Patriots were free falling that first half. It was just like, wait, what's wrong? Why aren't we clicking? Why aren't we blowing these guys out? Stupid Giants, wild card. They shouldn't have been hanging with us. It seemed like things were falling apart. We were free falling, Jeff Simons.
You know what I love about that track is there's no heartbreakers on it except Mike Campbell. And he tried to invite some of them to play on it. And the band was so burnt out from all the touring and the 80s. He tells a great story in the documentary, Howie Epstein comes over and he's like completely drugged out and he's playing bass. He's like, you know what? I don't even like this song. He's like, well, man, you don't have to play on it, Howie, if you don't want to. And he's like, I think I'm out. And then Tom looks at the camera and goes, that song was free falling. But like, you know, Benmont's not it. And it's Phil Jones, the drum tech who plays drums on the whole record. It's not even Stan
Lynch
or a drummer of note. It's just he really just brought his, he just had a couple of friends come over to his basement and made that record. It's kind of amazing.
It is.
That one sounds great. The rest of the record is a little sketchier in terms of how
it's a little light. I know it's not my favorite. And it's such his biggest hit by a colossal margin. And it's grown on me. Like when I remember, I don't know if you had this experience, but when I first bought it, I was disappointed with how light it was. Like it didn't
the whole record?
Yeah, it doesn't have a band sound. There aren't a lot of, it doesn't take, but the older I get, the more I really appreciate the songwriting. And I've come to really love some of the record. Like, I love You're So Bad, the way it sounds on the record. And Running Down a Dream sounds great on it. And
so with the whole Jeff Lynne producing thing, where he makes things bright and shiny and perfect, were there ever drum machines used on those songs?
There are on the next one on... the End of the Great Wide Open.
The Great Wide Open, yeah.
There's some drums. Yeah.
That one's even worse.
So. Yeah, that one's kind of not a great record.
Right.
That one really runs out of gas on side two. Like, there's just some crap on that one.
How are those songs live?
Better, but not all that great.
No. Okay.
In my opinion. I mean, there's some years there where Petty's a little, he's a little too staid for my taste. Like, it's a little too careful. Very, very arena rock. And then he kind of rediscovers a looseness that in the 90s that kind of kicks things off again, at least for me.
Okay.
Yeah. I love Free Falling. Even like right for the first time I heard that song, I absolutely love it. It's got several things that are really, really very Petty-ish. So first, chorus is about him being a depressed person. Like, yeah. I think that part is really interesting, that it's a real up-tempo, happy song. Uh-huh. It's a little bit like Born in the USA, but then when you listen to it and think about it for 2 seconds, you're like, wait a minute. This song is called Free Falling. And that's not something you associate with being fun.
Right.
And then the weird, like, kaleidoscopic lyrics, which are really capture a vibe more than an actual story. And
yeah,
there's so many of his best songs that are like that. I'm a bad boy and she's a good girl, like that combination of things. And then just the random places. He's got a lot of like situations where he's like living in Reseda. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Flying over Mulholland. Yeah.
Oh, so good. It's so good. And it comes in and out. You get this big picture vision of these two people and their relationship, and then into these real specific details and then back out again. He's just a fantastic songwriter.
He really is.
And then also the beautiful simplicity of that guitar part, the guitar part was played 75,000 times before Tom Petty recorded this song, and would have been played another 75,000 times with no one noticing it, but he put it together into here. And then on people recycling it, Jeff will probably know this story. When the band came in and cut Wildflowers, they referred to the song Wildflowers as Refallen.
Yeah, isn't that
great? Petty for writing the same song. And that was, I mean, Jeff's with me. Yeah, you see, Wildflowers is a much better song. I mean, that song, yeah, it's just, oh, I love that one.
Yeah. That's Refalling.
Refalling is so funny.
It's
the kind of joke you make when you've been in a band together for 25 years.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's just other. Like, it, like, you just eviscerate him. It's like, oh, by the way, we know you've sold 300 million records and you're a colossal star, but we're gonna call it Refallen just to keep
stick it to him.
Oh, know. For sure. I thought that was a sign that they were actually friends. They were legit friends. And also that Petty, you know, he seemed to be a nice guy. He seemed to be an actual nice person.
Well, the fact that like people stuck with him, right? Like, he had the same like right hand man since 73. He's got all the same guys in the band since Mudcrutch in 1971. Yeah. The original lead singer becomes the lighting director. The original drummer becomes the drum tech. I mean, like, nobody left his orbit, you know?
Wow. Gainesville. Make
one
those connections early.
He's one of those guys who, like, you know, is the center spoke on the wheel and can handle the pressure of being the center spoke on the wheel, you know?
Well, although I'm sure we'll get to this, but, I mean, the guy died of a
oh.
Like, I mean, and, like, so there's a whole like that really caused me to go back and re-listen to his catalog and think more.
Especially Echo. That Echo is a dark, hard to listen to record. Yeah.
But I mean, Free Falling, he's got songs about being depressed.
Yeah,
all the way through. I mean, even Mary Jane's Last Dance. I think I assume that has something to do with him having to quit pot, which of course he didn't. So
having to quit, but didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he had a heroin addiction. What, mid-90s, Jeff?
Yeah, that's the one that nobody really knew about it, except in the inner circle. That came out in Warren Zanes's book, and I saw him. He did this 20-night run at the Fillmore in 1997 that they just released the box set. They came back and tried to do it again, and they did 6 nights in 1999. Those shows were really different. They were really dark. I went to 2 of those, too, and I was like, something's not right here. And apparently that was the height of his heroin addiction.
Yikes.
They were getting outplayed by the opening acts. They had Lucinda Williams open, and she was coming right off Car Wheels on a Gravel Road and had that unbelievable backing band. They let her do almost an hour and a half, and like her set was better. And
I was just like
the band I saw her 2 years ago could have gone after anybody. So,
well, before we get to our three songs or choices when it comes to Tom Petty or if we're going to quiz each other or what, a real quick note about Taylor Swift and seeing Taylor Swift. Listeners, if she's coming to your general area and I did a 5-hour drive, you need to go see Taylor Swift. And I understand the ticket prices at this time are probably going to be $1,000.
So no, I just looked into my daughters are home for college. So I was like, all right, Dahlia, listen, run through the dates.
Let's
figure it out. Playing in Cincinnati, June 30th and July 1st. One seat somewhere in a football stadium, cheapest price, Tim Plain.
Is it $1,400?
$1,450.
Is it $1,450?
Yeah, we'd have to get 3 separate seats sitting by ourselves
for $4,200.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm thinking about it.
So can I just,
dude? I talked about it with the girls. Dahlia was like, "That's insane! It's so expensive. We definitely shouldn't do it." I was like, "You know that this will be the 3rd time that you, me, and your sister have seen Taylor Swift together. Like, that's worth spending some money on. Like, that's an experience that we should have."
I would like to put it this way. Hey, if I asked you right now, Ben Barton, could I borrow $150? You'd say, yeah. So just think of it like $150 for 10 years straight. That's all. Just spread it out. And basically what you're investing in, here's the thing that I've come to realize, is life affirmation. That going to a Taylor Swift concert is, I mean, it's overwhelmingly positive. It's emotional, especially if you're there with your daughter like I was, but it's also life affirming. Like, this is, I was blown away. I had no idea she could perform like she performs. She held 70,000 people in the palm of her hands and was like with us and talking with us. And to Jeff's point, she played freaking 44 songs. I was exhausted. I'm not going to tell you how many times I had to sit down. I was like, whoo. I mean, she was nonstop. I mean,
I'm so enjoying all the Instagram videos that people are putting up, like the
yeah.
where she trips or like, you know, misses the chair. And there's like people are posting like these moments from the performance. And I just love seeing that because I'm like, yeah, it looks like a musical from far away.
Oh, but yeah.
It's a show and like it's got mistakes and she can roll with it. And
I was so impressed with her. I'm a huge Reputation fan where I wasn't before.
Nice.
So listen to that album. Do either of you remember what 1970s TV show the Doobie Brothers appeared on?
Oh, dude, for sure.
What do you got?
Definitely on Gilligan's Island.
The Doobie Brothers were not on Gilligan's Island.
Yes, they were on Gilligan's Island because there's a scene.
What?
No. Like, which Doobie you be?
No. The answer is What's Happening.
Oh, maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe it is. Maybe Which Doobie do you be is on What's Happening.
Then. It's on What's Happening. And the plot of it was they busted some guys recording at their concert. And the tape recorder fell out of his jacket and the guys from What's Happening like helped the Doobie Brothers bust this guy and his illegal recording. And all I could think about was, oh my God, we should bring them to a Taylor Swift concert. Like, she has 70,000 people recording her and sharing her and like sharing the music. Like, what a different mindset. Here, take my performance, spread it around.
It is and it isn't. Like, you don't have, like, they will put out, I assume, a professionally recorded version of this tour at the end of it. But,
and people will buy it. In other words, people aren't going to buy it because, oh, well, I got it on my iPhone.
No, they're definitely going to buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
I'm so glad you had a good time. Flannery friended me on Instagram after
that. Did she?
It was like one of the proudest moments of my entire life when your daughter wanted to be friends with me. I was like,
let's go. All right. Well, let's get into our Tom Petty selections. Where do you guys want to go with this?
Well, I think
so Jeff and I were.
Go, buddy.
Jeff and I were tasked with each choosing three obscure to relatively obscure Tom Petty songs for your Woo. Listening enjoyment. Jeff, you want to go first? You want to go back and forth?
Yeah, let's go back and forth. You go first because I have like eight and I got it. And also, I won't choose the ones that you choose if we double.
Oh, good. I'll just do all three then.
All right.
Okay. So start. I'll give you the three and you can tell me which one you want to do first.
Okay.
The live version of Have Love Will Travel from the live anthology.
Love it.
Climb That Hill Blues from the Wildflowers outtakes.
Yep.
And then from the 97 show, The Date I Had with an Ugly Old Homecoming Queen.
Let's start with that because that's our overlap. That's great. And I'll choose another one.
Just the first 15 seconds of that. So funny.
Yeah, I got it. Date I Had. All right, here we go. Ready?
Well, I woke up at the Holiday Inn. I had $100 missing and a cut on the chin. Home, she said, son, she left on Monday with a man named John.
So here's some things that are fantastic about that song. First of all, just the sense of humor on that guy. I woke up in the Holiday Inn with $100 missing and a cut on my chin.
It's That's great, good stuff. That's a great line.
Start to
That's
a
great
song,
start.
For sure. And then later he's like, she was good looking, if you know what I mean, but she sure didn't look like the homecoming queen.
That riff is so great. I was at that show where that recording is from, and it was just so exciting to be in the room when they're like, we got a new one and it's so good. And it's so instantly like memorable. And that guitar riff is so thick and great. Like,
but you'll agree awesome. With me on this, right? Like driving down to Georgia and a little bit running down a dream. Like there's a bunch of songs that are basically this song.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic. I say they're that great. As praise, not as critique. Like just so good. The band is so tight. It's this is a 5-minute song and they just keep doing this blues riff over and over again. You caught 2 seconds of Tom Petty's awful harmonica playing.
Yeah.
Embarrassingly bad. Like a fourth grader bad. Like as if someone came wandering on and got out at Christmas and that was the first time they put it to their lips. That's what it sounds like. But everything else is fantastic. I mean, there's like a minute and a half guitar solo. There's a whole verse that's just the drums. So boom, 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 with a little drum solo in there. Just like an old-fashioned rave-up where everybody gets a turn having a solo. So good.
So let's do Climb That Hill Blues next. This feels
And actually, you can do the first 30 seconds of this one, too.
You got it. That feels like the right order. All right, come on. Cooperate.
Thank you. Something threw me in the dirt. Kinda got my feelings hurt. Weed was burning somewhere down the wind. Now I had to get up and climb that hill again.
Oh man. So this is like a 2.5 minute, 2:12 outtake from Wildflowers. And you get, first you get a little bit of a flavor for what a like complex person he was, but also like the what a great songwriter he was. And that opening guitar riff, the boom, boom, just announcing his presence with authority, and then coming in all quiet like that, and then climb that hill again. In retrospect, after he died, this was a song that I really kind of glommed on to.
Wow.
And like the, it like dudes like Petty make it look effortless to be Tom Petty, but there's no version of this where it's easy to be Tom Petty. Like, you just don't have this career. You don't have that band. You don't, yeah, don't do all the things that he did without waking up sometimes and dragging his ass through it and having to climb that hill again. And so this is one that just really speaks to me.
Yeah, and also just the quality of that recording. Like, Wildflowers is still one of the best sounding records that's ever been made. That, and you, I mean, if you listen to that on headphones, like, you can hear the pick squeaking against the strings. Like, it's the most spectacular analog sounding record of the 90s. Like, most 90s records sound a little shitty. And Wildflowers is just, I am consistently amazed at how fantastic that record sounds. And I've heard that record, I'm sure I've listened to it 1,000 times. And just now I put that on, I'm like, listen to how beautiful
Guitar
sounds. It's amazing.
I agree. Yeah, my dad has got, I think it's a 1963 Dreadnought Martin.
So
it's the Martin guitar that's the biggest body that they made. And it's before they put a metal rod in the neck. So actually the neck's kind of getting a little bit twisted because it's just warping with being an old piece of wood. But the sound of that guitar is the sound of the guitar we just heard. Like, I mean, like the fullness, the richness, the depth to that, just that first chord, you're like, oh my God, it sounds so great. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Have Love Will Travel.
From the top?
Just hit it from the top. Or you can either choose it. You can go at 2:30 to have a cheer for all those bad girls, or you can start at the top.
I better cheer for all those bad girls.
Woo!
And all the boys that play that rock and roll. They love it like you love Jesus. Does the same thing to their souls. And when all of this is over, should I lose you in the snow, I want you to know you're the one. And may my love travel with you every.
It does the same thing to their souls. That's a line.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Totally. I mean
this is like a companion piece to Free Fallin'. It's just a less popular song, but I mean, it's got this beautiful picture of this relationship and this woman and where her lines began to blur. So good looking, you never had a chance. First verse. Amazing. And this is a late one. This is from The Last American DJ, right, Jeff?
Yeah, which might be is one of his worst records, actually.
Yeah, but this one, and also it's like the again, what a strong, amazingly good live performance it is. Like, they were just a live band, you know, they like just exceptionally good. All the harmonies and the intricate guitar parts, so good.
Yep, great stuff. Good choices. I like it.
Ben, have you seen them live, or did you see them live?
Oh yeah, I've seen them a half. half dozen times.
Wow. Jeff,
and
you
I
too?
Saw him more than any other band. I think I saw him a week before he passed away, and it was my 20th show.
Wow. That's
so
awesome.
I counted him up after I had never bothered. And then when he passed away, I was like, oh, that was the last one. It was, I saw him more than any, I'm sure I've seen him more than any other artist.
Wow.
The people I play for, obviously, but like, yeah, he's, cause I saw all those Fillmore shows and I saw Mudcrutch 3 times and
wow.
I mean, he kept coming back to the Fillmore.
Yeah. Know? Like, right. Right.
I saw Tom Petty in the Fillmore 9 times.
That's awesome.
You know,
you and I were together one of the times you saw him at Bonnaroo, right? I saw him twice at Bonnaroo, but one of the times was with you. Yeah. You know, that story, that I kind of sort of know one of the guys who runs Bonnaroo.
That story's unbelievable.
He got so high and drunk that he left his trailer and got lost, and they had to put out an all points bulletin for Tom Petty, and he was passed out like in a back alley. Like,
oh my God.
Move ice and everything. And they gathered him up and brought him in, and then he played an hour later. And so,
2.5 hours.
At the time, I was like, what a hilarious story of this guy still getting after it.
And now it's
after he died,
so sad.
I was like, good Lord.
Do you remember what they said in the mic? Do you remember how they looked for him? They were like, Heartbreaker 1 is MIA. That's what you told me they said. Because they didn't want to be like, has anyone seen Tom Petty? You know? But you also told me that, like, the band obviously was like, yeah, this happens. And they, like, held him up, poured a bunch of coffee down his throat. And, like,
oh, and one of the things that was hard about him, this is the same thing with Prince. They toured with a doctor. Like, he died under a doctor's care. That was how much of a problem that he had. That's how addicted he was to painkillers. But I'm sure they shot him up, you know, Pink Floyd the Wall style, like, with vitamin D and a bunch of amphetamines and trotted him out on the stage.
Yeah, I saw a show. Suze and I went on our anniversary to see him, and I was in the fan club, so we had like 4th row tickets, and he came out. It was when Steve Winwood was opening up for him, and he came out, and he was trashed. He was working on pure muscle memory. Like, he wasn't really moving, and he was getting all the chords, and he was singing all the lyrics, but Suze looked at me and was like, he looks so unbelievably wasted. I'm like, yeah, that's because he is. Because after every song, you know, Tom always did this, like, thank you so much, especially when he had nothing else to say. And that's all he said. And after about 9 songs, you could kind of see him come back to us. Like, he was just like, coming back.
So,
and then
he got
more talkative. But you could just tell the band just was like, it's one of those nights. Just, we're going to play the greatest hits. And it was a bummer. It was a bummer to, because I had seen nights that were so transcendent, and he was so present, you know. That was tough.
Yeah, my dad and I saw him with Dylan. That was the first time I saw him, and it was on the
I saw that tour too.
Plantation tour, and man, did he shred. He shredded that night. And that was Greg Garden with the full horn section behind him.
That was the first time I saw him, the Southern Accents tour.
Yeah.
I must have been like 2 nights before, because, you know, he was going up the East Coast.
Yeah.
I saw him in Meriwether Post Pavilion, yeah.
All right, Jeff, what do you want us to know? Yeah.
Well, do you want me to quiz? You want Ben and I to do a little quizy quiz back?
Yeah,
and forth?
That'd be great.
Okay, all right. So, Ben, I'm going to play the beginning of 3 Tom Petty songs. I'm going to give you, I'm going to give you 5 seconds and see if you can get it.
This is going to be so humiliating and embarrassing.
No, you're going
to
do well.
It's like when I have to do it without Jeff.
You're going to do well. Ready? Here we go. Here's your first one.
Don't do me like that.
I was going to get that one. Don't do me like that. That's fine. Timmy, I didn't know. We're working together on this.
Sorry, dude.
We can work together.
I was going to get that anyways.
Sounds good. That's good.
All right, here we go. Here's another one you're going to get within 2 seconds.
You're jamming me.
You Wreck Me.
You Wreck Me is correct.
Oh, it's the same song.
It is. A lot of these are the same song. All right, let's see. We'll do a couple more here. You guys are crushing it.
Time to move on.
Yes.
By the way, Tim Plain, quite.
This is why he's the maestro.
I grew up in this torture basement.
All right, let's do it. All right, I'm going to give you a harder one. Ready? Let me see here. Let me give you one that's a little bit more off. You might get this one now. No guesses?
No luck.
Nothing.
That's Swingin' from Echo.
From Echo?
Well, you went from 0 to 60 right quick there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was kind of a hit from that. All right, we'll do one more. You guys did very well. This is great. All right, here we go. This one's a hit, but it's a harder one.
Okay.
When the time gets right,
I'm gonna pick you up.
What is it? What is it? I don't have it.
King's Highway.
Nice.
Dang it.
I'll await the day. All right, that was good. You guys did great.
That's good stuff.
All right. So I have 3-2. I'm going to pick 3 songs that all are recorded before the first record. I'm going to pick 3 Mudcrutch tunes. So, so the story of Tom Petty's in a band called Mudcrutch. They live on a farm together and they're playing gigs and they become huge in Gainesville. They're literally drawing like 3,000 or 4,000 people to their farm for their outdoor concerts and the police are annoyed. And he tells this amazing story. It's like, well, maybe we should make a recording and drive out to Los Angeles and get a record deal. And they go to Ben Montench's dad's house and set up gear and make a demo recording. They drive out to Los Angeles and Petty goes into a phone booth, and sitting on top of the phone book is a list of all the major record companies in Los Angeles and their phone numbers that somebody had left in the booth before him. So he calls the first one, goes in, they play 30 seconds of the tape. The guy says, stop, you're signed.
Wow.
You got a deal. He's like, and so they go to 3 other places. They get 3 other competing offers, right? They call home, like, bring all the stuff. We're going to be rock stars. And then he gets a cold call from Shelter Records. Somebody's called this guy. He's like, look, you got to go home to get your gear. My studio is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Come by. And he ends up signing with Shelter because they'd done Leon Russell and they'd done Joe Cocker. These are 3 songs off the demo tape that got them that deal. So it's the lost first Tom Petty record. None of these songs ended up on the first record. They didn't all come out until a box set. Playback.
So this isn't the stuff from Tulsa. This is stuff from
pre-Tulsa. This is
wow.
And it's a 10 song tape, but I'm gonna play 3 songs that I think are just terrific. So this is actually the very first song that Tom Petty put on tape in his life. It's called "Up in Mississippi Tonight." And what's amazing about it is this is 1972, so it's 4 or 5 years before the first record with American Girl on it. But you could hear how young his voice is, and they're not quite the players that they will become. But all of the ingredients of what will make him great are already present, in my opinion.
Cool.
Sal is up in Mississippi tonight with a man she hardly knows. Sally's wearing brand new clothes. Opportunity don't knock twice. So Sally said bye-bye. I hope she is alright. Up in Mississippi tonight. Sally left before the sun could rise. Head around, it was love with just one look. When she saw the size of his pocketbook, oh, Sally's doing fine. She's up in Mississippi tonight.
So,
a bunch dude, of stuff, that's a gem.
It's great.
It's oh my god,
little song. And what's great is all the stuff. A lot of the stuff Ben talked about. It's funny. It was love at just one look when she saw the size of his pocketbook. It's a hilarious.
Oh, dude. I also love, Jeff turned me onto the song and I've always loved it. It cracks me up that he's like, you know, they're in a fancy place. That's where they're up in Mississippi. So yokely. That's how shitty the panhandle of Florida is. They're like, she's off someplace really cool, Mississippi.
Biloxi. Up there. Oopsie. The song is so great. But it's also one of the things that Tom Petty is really underrated about it for is writing about women. He's actually what separates him from a lot of his peers and from a lot of classic rock is the women in his songs are three dimensional and he cares about them. Now, this song's a little bit of a put down, right? Like, but I can't help but feel like there's a part of him that's like, yeah, Sally, you got to do what you got to do. Like, we live in a shithole. And if there's a good looking guy from Mississippi who wants to take you out dancing, I'm sad and I get it. But
well, he's written for her. He's written for her in the song.
Yeah. And the female characters in his songs are not just objects of pleasure or affect. I mean, he's interested in women. One of my favorite Tom. Well, maybe I'll close with maybe I'll cheat and close with that one. I'm gonna on the fly cheat. Let me play one more that I just love from the Mud Crutch.
Okay.
So this one's called I Can't Fight It, which was gonna be the single. And what I love about it is he throws a big F-bomb in the middle of it, like as in 1975, he was going to get away with that on the radio. But again, everything that you love about Tom Petty is already kind of on display in this song. All right, here we go. All right.
Cause I've held it inside for so long. All my friends say I should use discretion, but I know I'm just not that strong. And I can't fight it. I can't keep myself from wanting you. I can't fight it. No matter what you say, no matter what you do. Cause you look so completely inviting, standing there with your tongue in your cheek. Yes, your lips are so fucking exciting. I can feel myself weakening the knees. Yeah, I know that you might put me under. Yes, I know that I might get the squeeze. But I really can't think of no other. Cause I know what I want and I need. And I can't fight it. I can't keep my...
I mean, that's their first kind of crap demo they recorded in some guy's living room.
Right. Unbelievable. And it's got all of the things that they would figure out how to use over and again, like that ding, 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 ding. You know,
Ben Montench is actually in that band, right?
Yeah.
But Mike Campbell is not.
Mike's in the band and Ben Mont. They're both in it. It's okay. Randall Marsh on drums and Tom Leadon, who is Bernie Leadon's brother from the Eagles. That's the band.
So the bassist and the drummer get replaced, but the keyboardist and the guitarist stay.
That's correct.
That's
well,
a good
Tom, wait, Tom's playing bass. Remember, they get rid of Tom Lydon on guitar and move Tom Petty over to rhythm. But this is when Tom Petty is lead vocals and bass.
Oh,
really? Wow. Huh.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So crazy.
Boy, that sounds like a million gajillion bucks. So
yeah,
good.
I know. Right. It's so exciting. And it's again, it's got great lines. You look, you know, you're sitting there also enticing with your tongue stuck right in your cheek, like. He already's got the, like you said, the
those
lyrics
glimpses.
Are telling a story, but it's so evocative. And
the
images. But 10 years later, he's writing about women in a way that is just heartbreaking. This is, I'm going to play my favorite Tom Petty ballad, which is from Southern Accents. And it isn't Southern Accents. It's the last song on the record, which is called The Best of Everything, which he played when I saw him at the Fillmore. He played it in the middle of the set, and it was not a song they played very often. And you could just see him fall in love with the song again. While the whole band has had this like moment, a minute in, like, wow, this song's pretty great. We forgot how much we like this one. It was really one of those live music moments you don't get unless you go out and see a show. So I'm going to play the alternate version of this. The version on Southern Accents got horns and it's, okay. It's more of a Baroque pop arrangement, and there's a more stripped down version from two different anthologies, but I'll play this one and see what you think. We're gonna wait for the ad to finish and
I
She probably works in a restaurant. That's what her mama did. But I don't know if she ever really could have put up with it. Or maybe she sings in a nightclub. Cause sometimes she used to sing. But I don't know.
What a great first line that is, man. She probably works in a restaurant. That's what her mama did. But I don't know if she ever really could have put up with it. I mean, this is what we talked about this last time. We talked about it, but like, that's the first sentence of a great short story. It's not just an amazing song lyric, you know.
He's got the whole story in his head as he kind of picks apart these little details to give us. I mean, it's really spectacular.
Ben, did you have the Illustrated History of Rock and Roll when you were a kid, that Rolling Stone? Mm. So I got for Christmas one year this, like, it was when Rolling Stone was like at its height. It was like 78 to 82, and they were putting out all these books like record guides. And they did this thing called the Illustrated History of Rock and Roll, and it was like two or three pages on everybody that they thought was a major artist up to that point. It's where Greil Marcus wrote the great line about Rod Stewart: rarely has anyone been blessed with so much talent, and rarely has anyone betrayed that talent so completely, which is maybe the most brutal thing anyone has ever said about anybody. But so I remember reading the description of Creedence Clearwater Revival, and the woman who wrote it, I don't remember her name, I wish I did, she said, "Creedence Clearwater Revival became my favorite band so slowly that I didn't even notice it happening. It was just one song at a time until I realized those were all the songs I loved more than any others." And we were talking before we started recording. I was like, I don't think I would ever describe Tom Petty as my all-time favorite artist until we start talking about him and I start listening to all these songs. Like, I have over 600 Tom Petty songs in my iTunes, live versions, full concerts. And I wouldn't get rid of any of them. And I mean, there are a couple of acts, like I think Bob Dylan's over 800, but that's because there's 80 Bob Dylan records.
Yeah, right, on right.
And I just, you know, there is something so undeniable for me about this guy who I lived in a place where he lived. He was about 15 years older than I was. And he was letting us know what we were going to face in the next phase of life. And so incredibly consistent because he held himself to such a high standard, right? Like, some of his records fall prey to the production values of the moment, but rarely are there's no record of his where the songs just all suck.
Right. Yeah.
He takes some chances. He swings and misses, but what record, Ben just made a face, what record is full of just bad songs?
I'm not crazy about the second one. I feel like the first record is great, and the second one is a real fall off. And then
that's interesting. Damn the Poor Torpedo as he finds his way. Yeah, you know, that's a lot. I mean, that's true that most bands, the second record is the worst because they spent 8 years writing the first one and 8 months writing the second one. But even that one's got I Need to Know, Listen to Her Heart, Too Much Ain't Enough. I mean, that's When the Time Comes. I mean, there's four bangers, right? It's good. You're laughing about When the Time Comes. I really like that one.
I just don't like the second record.
Yeah, no, I don't love it either.
Yeah.
But I do love him a lot. Like, I just like, and I don't see him. I don't see myself growing tired of his music.
No,
I have with some other bands I used to really love.
Right. I think I'm growing into it more and more.
I think it's worth noting, my first favorite Petty record was Southern Accents, and then my second favorite Petty record was Packetville Plantation, and he was a huge mainstay of my, like, little Southern rock phase in high school. And okay. He apologized for it later and was embarrassed about it later. But I mean, he tortured the fucking Stars and Bars behind him.
Yeah, man. The first show I saw. So I just, it's so funny.
I mean, the song Rebels is a great song. It's
which
not
I
a
actually,
good song. It's
that was
a great
the,
song.
That was my cover that I played Friday night. That's what I played in my solo set. I did Rebels.
You can't play that song?
Yeah, I played it solo at the piano because I'm fascinated by that song. I said it that night from the stage, like, there's only a handful of songs that get that, that can communicate what it's like to love where you come from and know that you shouldn't love it, right? There are just very few songs about the American South that get that, like, how am I not supposed to be in love with the place I come from and acknowledge how problematic that place is at the same time? When
he doesn't acknowledge it at all in that song, though. Where do you find it?
Oh, I think he does.
Where?
The character is a drunk loser. Honey, don't walk out. I'm too drunk to follow.
Oh, but first of all, I can tell you as a high school kid, I was like, that drunk tank in Atlanta
was
just a hotel room to me. I was like, oh, what a life. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, but you know now listening to it that it isn't. It's a trap. And then the last four lines, right, where I still feel the eyes of those blue-bellied devils walking around tonight in the through the concrete and metal. Like, it's still a dump. They never recovered. They never rebuilt. They never figured out a way to
come out. He's walking around in downtown Atlanta, and he can still feel the blue-bellied devils. I disagree. I think that, I mean, like, one of the reasons that I found it so attractive, I was like, I'm a rebel. He's a rebel. Oh, wait, who else were rebels? Oh, the guys in the South. Fantastic. No, I would sign up for this life of rebeldom.
What's the name of this song? What's the name of this song?
Rebels.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and listen
to
it.
You be the arbiter.
And I will be the judge.
Do the live version, though. The live version is just killer. It is a great, great song. And Southern Access is a great song, too. I mean,
it plays the hell out of itself as a solo piano song, too. I was like, I didn't expect to play it. And then I was screwing around on the piano 2 weeks ago and started playing it by accident and then sang it. I was like, well, I know what I'm doing.
Okay. All right. Well, I will be the arbiter, and I will send out the judgment on Instagram, because we've been locked out of our Twitter account.
You're still locked out?
So Elon Musk fired everybody, and I can't get anyone to respond and help me. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, fine. I forget my password. Send me the new password. And it says, we have sent the new password instructions to this email, which is my email address. But they're not. And then, like, I have nowhere to go there, and they won't respond via other means, via my Tim Plain Twitter. So, and plus, here's what takes me off. I try to log on to Twitter, and it's like, well, you don't have an account, but it has all these sample tweets that have come out recently, and they're all like hardcore racist, like Pepe the racist frog memes and stuff like that. I'm like, what? This is the stuff that's bubbling to the surface on his thing? Done with Elon Musk. I said it here first.
All right.
Damn. And that went somewhere quick. Well,
but
done.
I get to play my Tom Petty song before we wrap
this
up.
Yeah, what is it? We're always wrong, Timmy. What is it?
I want you to give me Woman in Love at the 2 minute 46 second mark.
Woo!
Because for me, Tom Petty is all about, like, the authenticity. Like, this is a lived experience that he's telling us about. And what you said about women, Jeff, fits here too. Like, she's a woman in love and it kills him, but he's got to let her go.
She's a
but it's not me. His voice when he's like, I don't understand the world these days. Like, that kills me. Yeah, his voice. Tough. I mean, totally owning that moment and letting us try to unpack it. And I love that he's bitter and he's raging and a little bit broken in that moment. And then it kind of gives us a little release from our own rage and brokenness.
Nice.
Them's my thoughts.
Mike, Jimmy.
Them's my thoughts.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I got to get upstairs. You guys have a great, great night. And looks like the tank is full.
Yeah, all right. Nice.
We know where we're going next?
We don't.
Well, somebody spin the globe and we'll pick a place. Sounds great. Right.
I was pitching St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Interesting.
Okay.
I have a clear person to choose for St. Louis, but that doesn't.
Well, you got to choose who you got to choose, but I got to. I mean, I think I have a clear one too.
Ooh. So.
Well, if I tell you that, then
okay. All right. Well, we will have to wait until we pull under the arches. I'll see you guys later.
I think it's an arch, actually. The arches is McDonald's.
No, we're going to McDonald's first. I'm starving. Are you kidding? Stupid diet. Later.
Electric Acid. Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour. Electric Acid.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Electric Acid.